How many times have you had a meal at a restaurant and wished you could make food that good at home? It is possible, and we have a couple of guests on hand who might know a few things about how restaurant food ends up tasting so good. They're both in charge of food at a couple of restaurants. Melissa McMillan is the owner and operator of Sandwich in Ashland and a food cart called Pastrami Zombie, relatively new in Portland. Billy Busher is the chef at Alchemy at the Winchester Inn in Ashland, and he's the recent winner of the Iron Chef competition at the Bite of Oregon. We've invited them here so we can pick their brains about how to make really good meals, and we invite you to ask the questions as well. Melissa McMillan, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thanks for having us.
Billy Busher, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about your journeys and how you got to the place where you are now. Billy, let's start with you.
I started in the kitchen when I was 15, washing dishes. And kind of worked my way up through ever since.
What kind of a place were you working back then?
That was the Jacksonville Inn in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. So you got to start at a pretty good restaurant.
Yeah. I had an opportunity to work underneath some really talented chefs and kind of took me under their wing and showed me the ropes.
So at age 15, taking a job as a dishwasher, was just like, I'm going to do this for a while, then I'll figure out something else. Or were you always interested in food?
Honestly, not necessarily. My dad was real sick when I was a kid and needed to find some work and kind of fell in love with it.
What about it was it that appealed to you the most? I mean, what made you catch fire and go, wow, this is something I could really get into doing on a regular basis?
Well, it was the first time the chef at the time, he made something with ingredients and put flavors together in a way I'd never had before. And it was, you know, kind of a mind explosion at that point, you know. Yeah, the first time you tasted something where the flavors were balanced and put together nicely and cooked, you know, properly. And
is it as difficult as it can appear sometimes? I mean, obviously you've been doing it for long enough that you know this stuff is second nature to you by now. But I mean, when you're talking about balancing flavors and having things cooked properly as well, I mean, there's a couple of different kinds of expertise in there.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of depends on the day and the ingredient and kind of what's going on. But I think there's a form of second nature to it for sure. But we try to continue to push ourselves. And if there's something that maybe we're not so sure about, we'll research it and try to move forward that way.
Melissa McMillan, tell us about your journey and how you ended up in charge of the place in Ashland and the small place in Portland. And it sounds like you got a third place potentially on the horizon.
In the works. Yes, sir. I've been working in restaurants for heck.
Hell's fine. You're
gonna hell. since I started at 14 at this small Italian joint in Chicago. It was called My Favorite Inn. They needed help on the cold line. And there I was, 14 years old, slinging salads while my mom was working out front. And from then, I just never left. And when I moved to Oregon, I worked in restaurants here and love the community, started coaching baseball, and been coaching kids in Ashland for the last 10 years. And I said, well, I should probably make a career for myself. And so I just went at it. There's not really a lot of places to get a Midwest style sandwich. And that's all I wanted. I just wanted a good, juicy, wet, naughty sandwich. and so I just started making them myself.
And there is certainly a flavor of the Midwest in there. There's all kinds of Cubs memorabilia and pictures of Wrigley Field and stuff on the wall. So it's a real sense of Chicago in sandwich.
Yeah, I'm pretty much a diehard Cubs fan. Andre Dawson's my hero.
Hawk.
The Hawk. The Bat Slinger. Yeah, my dog's names are, well, Cubby's not here anymore, but Cubby and Wrigley. And this is our year. I'll sell sandwich to help the Cubs win if I have to, but I want it back after they win.
Okay, sounds fair enough. So, what kinds of kitchens were you working in? And I mean, so it was really looking to provide a kind of sandwich that Ashland didn't have.
I spent a lot of time in the front of the house. It's only the last 3.5 years I spent a ton of time in the kitchen, and now I'm just always in the kitchen. And I had it's two sandwich shops I used to go to all the time when I was a kid. One called the Hoagie Hut. If you go to Sandwich and you get the Timbo, I stole that from the Hoagie Hut and changed it differently where I use all natural beef. I use local produce. La Baguette makes the bread. So it's basically a Chicago sandwich on steroids, but not steroids because it's all natural.
It's all natural.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
no human growth hormone involved.
Yeah. And my other favorite sandwich was a turkey and Havarti on wheat with lettuce, tomato, and onion at Swiss Colony. And that's the Tegan over there at Sandwich, essentially. So I do old school. Like Joe Madden, he says, do simple better.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I use one of my main tools is an axe, firewood, and whatever the farmers can give us.
Well, let's talk about that then, about local ingredients. I mean, so it sounds like you guys are both making some efforts to make sure that this stuff doesn't have to travel very far to get to the tables at the places you're serving.
Oh, yeah, of course. And I know Billy does a great job of that.
Okay, well, let's let Billy pick it up from there. Talk about the stuff you bring into Alchemy and how local it is.
So we actually just picked up some heirloom tomatoes from Ella Bella Farm in Talon. They also do dried tomato farming as well, and we just picked up a company called Charlie's Produce, and they do local and regionally local. So we just did a farm tour up in Portland, stopped at six or seven local farms. You know,
I saw you picking microgreens on the interwebs.
Yeah, kind of ate my way through the microgreens. Delicious. They've been really pivotal in helping source some local and regionally local stuff.
And pastrami zombie, I found an urban farmer stone's throw away. She actually won Chopped and everything up there, and she decided to start an urban farm. And best tomatoes, I mean, right now people are saying the BLT is the best in the city, and I attribute it to simplicity and killer tomatoes.
Has this changed over the course of your careers, though? I mean, when you were first starting out, and granted, neither one of you looked terribly old, but Billy, when you were starting out, for example, were you not getting a lot of local ingredients?
When I was starting out, it didn't seem like it was that much in the forefront as it is today. People didn't really think about it. Now it's everybody's asking, where did this come from? You know, how was it raised? And I think that's a good thing.
What's the chicken's name?
Right.
That's right.
His name was Raymond. He grew up on a farm in Scappoose. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Okay. Back to talk more with Billy Buescher and Melissa McMillan about how they prepare food in restaurants and how we might learn some things from them to prepare food in our own kitchens. Join the conversation. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are learning about how to cook today, and it's not a rudimentary cooking course, but a what are the secrets of the kitchen kind of thing, as we talk to Billy Buescher, who's the chef at Alchemy at Ashland's Winchester Inn. Melissa McMillan is the owner-operator of Sandwich, a restaurant in Ashland that serves, you guessed it, sandwiches, and also a food cart relatively new to Portland called Pastrami Zombie, both getting fairly rave reviews, both people getting rave reviews in their businesses. You can join us on The Exchange as we talk about things to do in the kitchen that can make our food better. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Billy, let's talk about winning first at the Bite of Oregon Iron Chef competition. Was this your first time in that competition? I got the cheerleading section from Melissa.
It was my first time up at the Bite of Oregon, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've done the local competition, I think, four or five times.
So what is it about Iron Chef competition? For those of us who don't watch the Food Channel on a regular basis, what are you basically thrown a set of ingredients and a clock and said, do this by this time?
Exactly. Yeah, it's terrifying, to be honest. It's the competition.
It didn't look terrifying by your performance.
Oh, you just got to put your head down and pray that you don't mess up, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what is a finger lime vinaigrette? When I saw that on your list of things that you had done there,
the finger limes, they're about the shape and size of your finger, and they're full of little. It almost looks like lime caviar. So we peeled those and made a little vinaigrette out of it with some of the shiso was one of the secret ingredients in the basket.
Shiso. What is a shiso?
You know, I'd never worked with it before in this form anyway. I had some of the shiso microgreens and had a really interesting flavor. And when you get things in the basket, you know, there was a few things I had never worked with before. And you got to taste them and kind of decide, okay, what am I going to do with this in about a minute?
So that's interesting. So you are learning as well. I mean, obviously about ingredients then. I mean, it's not like you know all the stuff on the table.
Sure.
Do you get any say in what goes in? Can you ask for like one? Is it like phone a friend? I want one a loaf of Velveeta or something?
No. The bite in Portland, they had 5 Mr. ingredients in the basket, and you had to incorporate all of them. Part of the difficult part is that you got to make those ingredients stand out and be the star, you know. And they have support ingredients on the table as well that you can work from. You kind of want to use those sparingly and use those support items for the 5 mystery ingredients.
Okay, so is there a directive to like use everything on the table or to use as little on the table as is offered? Or
not necessarily. That kind of comes down into the judging, you know. I'm sure you know they know what the mystery ingredients are and what those 5 ingredients are, specifically the one up in Portland. And based on what you did with them and how well they stand out.
Why don't you tell them about those secret bags you made that impressed everybody?
The secret bags?
Yeah, you had pickled some stuff.
So we brought up a chamber Kralvec machine. For me, it was one of the best tools for a competition with such limited time. We had 30 minutes to come up with 6 plates and a minute to kind of brainstorm after they unveiled the ingredients. The chamber Kralvec machine, it can marinate things that normally take, you know, 6 hours and do it in 20 minutes. Or you can take watermelon and compress it, and, you know, when you're done with it, it looks like tuna.
Wow. So how much has the gadgetry changed since you started cooking? I mean, I was reading about sous vide a couple of years ago and some of the other stuff that's come along. The person who runs the sandwich restaurant is like, yeah, whatever.
a tool is an axe.
Who said this already? But, I mean, so the machine you were just talking about, is this something that you wouldn't have even thought about using 5 or 10 years ago?
I was Tim Keller's sous chef over at the Noonan Estate, and that was my first introduction to sous vide cooking. And you know, it's really a great tool. It cooks things at the perfect temperature you want to cook them. Instead of violently or rapidly cooking something at 350 or 400 degrees, you're cooking it like, let's say it's a chicken breast. You know, you want it to reach 160 degrees. With the circulator, you can cook it at 155 or 160 degrees, and it'll be that temperature all the way through. And that helps, you know, maintain juices, and it gives you know, vegetables or meat or whatever you're doing kind of a different texture.
And you can sous vide for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I know Josh, he loves the sous vide machine and he'll do it for days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so now that we're talking about cooking things slowly, though, because this really gets into the wheelhouse of what goes on at Sandwich, because you prepare your own meats there, don't you?
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. So tell us what you can tell us that it is not just a big fat secret that you're hiding from the world forever.
Almost every sandwich on the menu takes 7 days to make with all the components in it. So with a pastrami, it's brined for 4 days and then it's smoked for 3 to 5 hours, depending on the cut of meat, the smoke that's being poured out of the smoker. After that, it goes into the steam process. You know, the roast beef, we're trimming that, marinating it, and then roasting it. Turkey, it's brined for 6-7 days, and then we roast it. So it's, you know, and then you take the Italian beef and do the jardiniere, and that's vegetables, and that's a 3-day process just for vegetables right there. So everything is kind of low and slow, really, at the end of the day. You can't get your fire above one. Well, me and Chris Hart will have a debate about how high you can get your fire. But happy birthday, Chris. 160, 170, and you just go from there.
A lot of things that are variables, it seems like, in the smoking process.
I mean, oh,
yeah. Hot heat of fire, you want to soak the wood before you do the smoking, too, right?
No.
No, really?
No.
Okay.
Because
it's not that hot.
You can. I mean, you can soak wood to do a smoked salmon or to do whatever. Mm. But in my business, you're not soaking the wood. You know, originally I'm from Texas, but I spent my whole life in Chicago. Texas, Franklin is not the most famous brisket maker in the country, is not soaking his firewood.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not doing that. Some people do it for other stuff, but variables are how dry the firewood is, what the temperature is like outside, the airflow. You know, you can change the airflow in your smoker too. And you have tuning plates that you can have in a smoker to change the how fast the smoke travels through. It's actually, even though one of the most primitive forms of cooking, it's actually, there's a lot to it.
How much variation do you want? I mean, you mentioned some of the things that'll change, you know, like the outdoor temperatures and things like that. But I mean, you know, while you probably want to acknowledge that there is a world outside and things will taste a little different, I mean, you still want to keep the menu consistent.
Oh, so, yeah. You can see the smoke and you can see how it travels. So even though there's variables, you can get that smoke to where it needs to be, no matter what the variables are right now. So Bobby's over there smoking right now. What up, big Bobby? And it was a little chilly this morning. I saw him down underneath there, and I'm confident. I mean, if you've tried his pork wine, he's going to smoke it perfect. It's just the way it goes.
How much will the menu at a place like Sammich or Pastrami Zombie change over the course of the year just to reflect what's available?
Every day.
Really?
We have, at Sammich, we have 12 sandwiches on the menu, two salads, and two specials every day. So depending on what Chris gets from Four Winds Farms or Fry Family Farms or from the market, depends on what's actually going on in the sandwich. And then for the season, so we got Amy who makes jams, right? Well, we just got a review about our plum jam. I think it was not plum jam, but her fruit jams, like those all change for the seasons. So it's every day. It's awesome. And the same thing at Pastrami Zombie. Whatever I get at the farm, that's going on the special. And you can't get tomatoes for, well, you guys are going to get them down here longer than I'm going to get them up there. So tomato specials are out the window. We don't even have tomatoes. We're a sandwich shop. And we don't have tomatoes, 10 months out of the year?
Well, that is amazing. So how different is the menu at Alchemy, for example, going to be in September versus what you put out there in February or March?
Much different. You know, we try to keep things lighter in the summer, you know, with so many fresh fruits and vegetables coming through. So in the winter and the fall, we'll do more braised things and kind of change with the seasons. We change the menu about 4 or 5 times a year and include a lot of specials. And we'll change out dishes here and there. We're always tweaking things.
How often do you change your specials, though? I see your pictures online, and it looks like they're changing a lot.
Yeah, at least, you know, I'll run, you know, 2 or 3 specials a week. And depending on, you know, we just got some, I think the last of the padrones in, and I think we're getting the last of the corn in right now. We did a special with a cream corn and roasted padrones, manchego cheese, and dilling some of those fresh and really nice cherry tomatoes from the farmer's market.
Well, my stomach is growling here on the Jefferson Exchange, and maybe yours is too, as we talk about food with a couple of people who are very good at providing food to large numbers of people. Billy Busher is the chef at Alchemy at the Winchester Inn in Ashland. Melissa McMillan is the owner, operator, and frequently cook at Sammich in Ashland, and the food cart Pastrami Zombie. Now getting some fame in Portland. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about food preparation on their scale and how we can convert some of the secrets that they provide and some of the things that they do on our kitchen scale in our own homes. Join us at 800-838-3760 with your questions. On the phone, by email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. Jeannie in Medford already checked in with a question about spices, which is always a big one for me. We had talked to somebody a while ago who said, if you can't smell them anymore, throw them away, which is a big one. She wants to know how fresh spices like rosemary figure into the cooking process. Should be added at the beginning or at the end?
Well, it depends what you're making.
For sure, yeah.
If you're doing like a stock or something, throw it right in. But if you're doing something fancy for garnish.
Yeah, if you're, you know, doing it, it depends on if you're doing stocks, you know, make a sachet, you know, do you want to roast the spices? We don't use a lot of dried herbs in the restaurant. We use a lot of fresh herbs. But as far as spices are concerned, we kind of stick to, you know, five or six or so, particularly for our style of food anyway.
Mm-hmm. Do chefs come with certain kinds of spices they just like to use? I mean, is there one in particular that you think is like, wow, this is great on everything, but I realize as a chef I need to hold back once in a while?
Actually, it's kind of funny. I kind of go through stages. You know,
I'm still in a Chipotle phase myself.
Right? Well, it's, I went through a time phase, phase where, I put, I was messing with time and trying it out.
Never
and everything.
Enough time.
Yeah. You know, and then there's tarragon, and so it's those are herbs, I guess. But
I love black pepper.
Right.
Can't get enough of black pepper.
Yeah, pepper's interesting. I mean, you can, depending on how you grind it, and if it's coarse grind or fine grind, textures play a lot in how you taste things as well.
So I mean, how long does it take before you feel like you're fully versed in spices? Because there are just so many different things available for use and so many different ways to use them, and it seems like you could probably spend 80 years doing this and still not know everything there is to know.
Yeah, but
even
you got your
one
taste
kind of
buds.
Cuisine.
Well, that's it. I personally think that you're never really fully versed in anything, or I hope I'm never really fully versed in anything. I think that it's always, utilizing an ingredient that maybe you've used for a long time, you find, finally utilize it in a new way, it becomes new to you,
Now, what about the age of spices, though? Was the recommendation pretty good that if you can't detect an odor from them anymore, they're probably not any good?
Sure, yeah. Depending on where you get them and how they're, are they freeze-dried or, kind of what's going on there.
And how they're stored.
Yeah.
Okay, so is a spice, Melissa? I mean, is black pepper going to be the same coming out of five different cans from five different makers?
No. Uh-oh.
And what do you get the
peppercorns?
And
it has to do with, just like what he was saying, the how you grind it, the coarseness. Like if we're going to, like this weekend, we're going to do a smoked prime rib on special Ed Samich. And I have a feeling that Chris is doing a coarser grind on the, so it has a nice crust on the outside of it. And I think that you can buy crappy spices and you can have nice spices. Jacobson salt is an example of a great there's a difference in salt. You can take Morton's salt and you can take his salt and you're going to tell a difference, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Huge difference in salt.
Yeah.
So I mean, what level of respect or lack perhaps do you have for the little spices of the jars of spices we buy at the grocery store?
It depends on the brand, I guess. And,
yeah.
And,
there's nice brands at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Is pretty much you get what you pay for, though. If you're going trying to go cheap on spices, you're going to end up with something that'll be
pretty much anything,
inert.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's just life, bro.
Right.
Yeah. If you're buying the stuff in the shopping cart that's on sale, you better use it that day.
Yeah.
Okay, there's the good advice we're looking for. Let's take a call. We have Melissa McMillan from Sandwich and Pastrami Zombie, Billy Busher from Alchemy here, and here's a call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, I'm wondering how much experience do either or both of you have with offal, sweet meats, organ meats, and what would you recommend for spicing a pork pâté?
Okay, pâté and organ meat. Good category to get into. And Melissa's pointing at Billy, so you're
for
on
the pâté.
So I like, well, maybe this goes back to the tarragon thing. For offal and stuff like that, I really like the anise flavor. I think that it's I use it almost we'll use absinthe or anisette almost as the way we would use vinegar or salt and something to kind of highlight or brighten up something that would normally be kind of dark and heavy.
I think too when you just said the word salt, it's almost amazing how much meat I've eaten that salt.
Yeah,
that's it. Like, just put some in there.
Absolutely. We cure a lot of things in salt, even if it's for, 12, 24 hours or even, 10 to 20 minutes.
Curing does what?
Well, depending on, if we're doing a batch of confit, you're basically, when you add salt to something and you cure, you're removing moisture. So, we've got halibut on the menu right now, and I just ran a special with some king troll salmon. And I learned this technique from a guy who worked with me about five years ago, and he worked at a sushi restaurant in San Francisco. And we got some salmon in that wasn't quite up to what we our standards in color and kind of texture. And he covered the thing in salt, for about 10 minutes, you know, top and bottom, and then rinsed it off. And what I noticed was the color brightened up and the texture firmed up. And, you know, we do that with our halibut. Same thing, and it the flesh is firmer and flakier and almost takes on the flavor of a king crab.
So it's almost like you can do a little restoration on something that's not quite up to your usual standards.
Sure, yeah, and you know, if you've noticed, if you cook salmon, the white film that kind of seeps out of the edges, when you salt the fish beforehand, that removes the liquid that's just on the outside of the fish, and that when that happens, when the white film comes out, the liquid comes out inevitably, and that brings those proteins, and that's what the white stuff coming out of the salmon is. That essentially kind of stops that process from happening.
So much science, it seems like, in cooking now. Was it that way when you got started? Because it seems like we're knowing all of the processes, and I mean, there's a lot of physics and chemistry in here that it used to be like, yeah, you do this because it tastes good.
Well, I think the science has always been there. Yeah. It's people are maybe a little more aware of it now.
And I think it's all to do with style. Mm-hmm. Like, I have one chef, his name's Keebler, and he's a mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, he's switched some of the recipes to, they're so damn consistent now because it goes by weight, ounces, grams.
It's a really, really precise measurement
and
weight.
He'll give you a mathematic algorithm to the recipe.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to do it like that. I'll say, hey, this is what I think, and then he'll go home and he'll, you know, but we have two different styles. That's why it works so good.
Okay, better cooking through mathematics. We'll check in more with Melissa McMillan and Billy Buescher. When we come back to the Jefferson Exchange, more phone calls waiting. You can join the line as well. Let's come back to the Jefferson Exchange and talk more about making restaurant food in our own kitchens. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about cooking today. We're talking about preparing food in professional kitchens with a couple of people who do that all the time. Melissa McMillan is the owner and operator of Samich in Ashland and a food cart called Pastrami Zombie in Portland. Billy Buescher is the chef at Alchemy Restaurant in the Winchester Inn in Ashland, and he's the recent winner of first place in the Iron Chef competition at the Bite of Oregon. So we've got some pretty well-established people here, and lots of questions for them about how to prepare food, if we can get even close to getting the stuff in our kitchens to taste as good as the stuff they make in theirs. Your questions are welcome at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And here is a call from John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, thank you. So I'm a guy who never eats spicy food. I guess I'm a weenie, and the rest of the family usually gives me a hard time about it. But my question is, what are some of your favorite spices that are not hot and spicy, and then what do you typically go for in terms of the stuff that is?
Okay, so we've established black pepper already with Melissa, but what else can you tell us about favorite spices that are not terribly hot?
I like... I'm so simple. I'm like... thyme, salt, pepper, lemon,
You know, there are certain peppers that are, you know, depending on the time of year, you know, are, you know, in the middle of summer, pasillas aren't, you know, too spicy. But right now I'm noticing they're kind of picking up some heat. And as far as the spice is concerned, you can kind of limit how much you put into it. And
I don't think you're a wimp for not eating spice.
No.
I think that... everybody just wants everything to be so spicy. Like, there's certain sandwiches, if somebody asks for hot sauce, I tell them to take a hike, because everything is not supposed to be spicy. You're supposed to taste the stuff. So I would tell your family, you're tasting the food and they're just tasting the heat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's definitely too much spice in the world.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever use the really super hot peppers? Like, is it the ghost pepper is the really hot one?
You know, I'm kind of with this guy. I'm just recently starting to get into, you know, spicier food. It's never really been something I've been really interested in. So
we'll do serranos and jalapenos, but ghost peppers, I'm like, trying to get through the day.
Yeah, it sounds like
what's that called? Is that the Scoville index, the one that measures the heat? And some of those measurements are just amazing to me.
For sure, yeah. And you couldn't get me to eat one of those things.
Yeah.
So what kinds of things?
Rosemary.
If you could cook food that you really like to eat. But, I mean, is there stuff you really like to eat that you don't make in your own kitchen because it just doesn't fit the brand of the restaurant where you work?
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of fried rice at home, actually.
Really?
I don't do anything really, you know, Asian-inspired in the restaurant, but I kind of lean that way when I'm at home, mm-hmm. Those sorts of ingredients.
So in terms of picking this stuff for a menu, I mean, you got to think in terms of a brand, you know? And I wonder how much the brand is affected by the surrounding because it's not just Alchemy, but it's Alchemy at the Winchester Inn. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this place that actually was once Ashland's Hospital, I guess. This ornate old Victorian kind of building, and so does that in some ways guide the kinds of things you'll put on the menu?
I think more so. The owners gave the restaurant its own name 2-3 years ago. Before it was just the Winchester Inn, mm-hmm. you know, and restaurant. Now it's Alchemy, and that when it was the Winchester Inn, I felt like we wanted to lean more towards, you know, the Winchester Inn brand. And, you know, now Alchemy, you know, the fusion of different things to create something else entirely, it kind of leaves us open to whatever we really want to do.
And I mean, does that challenge you as well to come up with stuff that's, you know, the Alchemy is like trying to turn lead into gold. I mean, trying to convert things into things they weren't originally?
Well, sure. And I think that's, you know, this anybody strive really in the kitchen is to try to take something from its current form and transform it, you know, into something else.
Yeah, and make it taste good.
Yeah, that's it.
So is there stuff that you like to eat that you don't serve at Sandwich because it just doesn't fit the Sandwich brand, as it were?
Yeah, it's sort of. I like live for Sandwich food. If I'm like out of town for a week and not near pastrami zombie or Sandwich, I'm like dying for a burger, a Timba, an Italian beef. Like I love that food. That is me to like the core. Now I do love Asian food and I love pasta and stuff like that. But there's places I can go to eat that. But I would say, almost everybody that works with me at Sandwich too, we eat there every day. Mm-hmm. Like I'm off the menu. It's not like, hey, I'm going to make something secret like with the ingredients that I have. It's like, oh, I want a Timbo, man. Let's do this.
So I've been referring to Pastrami Zombie as a food cart. Is it a cart? Is it a truck? What are you doing up there?
Mm-hmm. It's a truck that I brought home, a busted up, beat up truck. And I think that my coworkers thought I was a little bit crazy at first. Then I called up Jesse Rep and I was like, dude, I got this project for you. And Chris Hart let me put in his yard, and 2 months of hardcore labor, a lot of help from a lot of people. Basically, all my baseball dads helped me transform this thing, and then a couple of friends that I have. And now it's this big, huge, beautiful truck that looks like a Sandwich kitchen, but on wheels. Mm-hmm. It's the coolest thing.
So do you keep it in one place in Portland? Do you move it around?
No, we keep it in one place mostly. But like Monday, we did Bree and Dave from Grimm. They're the head actor and actress. They hired us to come out and feed.
Oh, David Gentoli and
Bree Turner.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They hired us to go out there and cook a meal for the crew as a thank you to them because it's their last season. Something huge coming up for us on next Friday and Saturday is Portland Night Market. There'll be about 20,000 people there over the course of the weekend. And, yeah, so I got a couple weddings, and then offices, you know, they want to treat their employees to mm-hmm. something nice to eat. And so we move it around sometimes.
So how long has Pastrami Zombie been open?
On the 18th, it'll be 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're like it's awesome. We're
Your rep has really taken off like a rocket, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. You know, everybody works so hard. Like, the staff at Samich, they're making all the meat for Pastrami Zombie. Like, these are hardworking, awesome people that love making really good food. I couldn't be more proud to be a part of this team and to have basically created the team, and now we're all doing it together. It's something seriously amazing. Like, I have a full-time staff that will be a full-time staff in the winter, and you could ask Billy in a restaurant to have a full staff and be full-time with them in the winter time. It's pretty amazing.
It's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because Winchester Inn obviously is going to be have some seasonal fluctuations, and in shoulder season, it seems like the restaurant itself would not be as busy.
Sure. Ashland is,
seasonal.
Very seasonal, depending on, you know, with the Shakespeare Festival. And that's something that we're, you know, we're kind of hoping to make Alchemy a bit of a destination spot. And that's something we do have some fun things planned for this winter. We do the Dickens Feast in December. And this Thanksgiving, we're actually doing something a little different. We're doing a 5-course tasting menu this year. I'm pretty excited about it. Just finished the menu.
So a bunch of different flavors to get, not just a, you know, not just turkey on the plate.
That's it. Yeah, actually, we don't have turkey. I've got turkey as a force meat. We're actually doing a reverse version of a turducken with a quail.
Really?
On the menu as well.
Yeah. All right, sounds fun. All right, back to food topics. Here's Karen in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Billy Bush Busher and Melissa McMillan.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I'd like to circle back to the discussion about salt in cooking, and with trying to be careful about salt intake for health reasons, etc. I'm wondering how sensitive you are to that for people who do need to watch salt intake, and how you test the food for if the salt level is appropriate before you serve it. I've even been to a place where I couldn't eat anything that particular restaurant had that night, sent two things back because they were way, way, way too salty. So on a health issue, I'd like to hear your response.
Okay. Thanks for that, Karen. Appreciate it. We got Melissa moving to a microphone.
There's definitely a fine line there, and I know with me and Billy both, if people have health restrictions and stuff like that, we're so happy to accommodate them.
Absolutely.
And oversalting is just bad, period.
Mm-hmm.
So that shouldn't be happening either, but I think accommodating people's cool.
Absolutely, and there are quite a few things that we can do. That's where, you know, we really lean on, you know, fresh herbs and, you know, stuff like lemon zest, and, you know, you can really incorporate a lot of flavor into stuff without you know,
salt, if somebody can't have it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the acid is like the best way, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Different vinegars and acid from citruses and stuff like that.
Okay, so don't leave your spices around too long. Bring in local stuff as much as you can, fresh local stuff. Mm-hmm. Easy on the salt. What are some of the other things that people should know in their own kitchens that are going to make their food close to what you guys are offering?
Use fresh herbs. That's something that I think, you know, we don't use a lot of the dehydrated herbs and stuff like that. And they're good for, you know, certain things like sausages.
We're talking like sage and thyme and rosemary.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And particularly, you know, I think thyme takes on a kind of a strange smell and taste when it's dried. But I think that, you know, in home kitchens and stuff, I think a lot of fresh herbs, you know, use zests and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of ways you can build up flavor.
But I'll still hold firm to at home, people are afraid to use salt and pepper too. Like, if mm-hmm. If you're going to go grill burgers, put some salt and pepper on it on both sides and let it sit out for 15 minutes before you're going to. I mean, me and Billy are probably going to do something a little bit different than that, but that's totally simple. It's totally easy.
50 minutes before you cook it?
Yeah, and your burger is going to taste 10 times better, or your steak. Like,
yeah, you're totally right. I think that, you know, if you get really good ingredients, you don't have to do a lot to them. You know, something as simple as salt, and that's what's beautiful about summer and what's beautiful about this area is we have so much local produce and we really have access now to a lot of local meats and stuff like that. You don't have to do a lot to them to make them great. They're kind of great on their own already.
Now, what about tools, knives, any sorts of kitchen equipment? What are the kinds of things that people generally don't have at home that you have in professional kitchens that you think they probably might want to get?
A commercial dishwasher.
For cleaning all that stuff.
That's it.
Got knives, that's cool, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sharp knives, that's, you know, hands in your knives, to, you know, two of the most important things in the kitchen. Yeah.
So are people afraid to invite you guys to dinner?
Sometimes, and I'm like, dude, just we don't care what you like. My buddy Neil, he's he owns Smithfield's. We were talking about it the I don't know, a while back, and it's like, we don't care what you cook us, just cook something for us. Like,
yeah,
sometimes we want a break.
Uh-huh. We're sitting back having a beer and someone else is cooking.
Yeah,
we're okay.
Like, totally cool with me.
I think everybody's afraid to end up in a cookbook someday, like the people that Mary Frances Kennedy Fisher once criticized as serving turd-like sausages.
Oh.
We're not going to complain.
No.
Right. So I mean, so you talked about not getting fresh herbs is one mistake. What are some of the other mistakes that people make in home cooking that you guys are like, oh my God, we'd never do that professionally?
Overcook it.
I was just going to say, yeah. Don't be afraid.
Yeah, a little blood ain't going to kill you.
All right, so if people are concerned about health, I mean, and this is important, particularly with poultry, I know you want to make sure it gets to 160 at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But
you got to think about carryover temperature, too. So,
yeah,
you
so
know.
So which is what? You stop short of the actual final temperature?
Yeah, so if you know if you're cooking chicken at home, you want to stop at, you know, well, yeah, 155 or 160.
Yeah,
it's going
to,
you know,
say.
I would probably stop at 155. It'll carry over 10 degrees or maybe 150 depending on what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd probably stop at 150 and let it
carry its
sit.
Way through, you yeah. know, because that it's not when you pull it out of the oven, it doesn't stop cooking. You pull it off the pan, you know, it's still, you know, mm-hmm. and that's, I guess, the difference between sous vide cooking, as we were talking about earlier, is a rapid, violent cook as opposed mm-hmm. to a gentle, slow cook.
So a good meat thermometer, it sounds like, is certainly in order for
absolutely.
You
know,
yeah.
make sure you get your stuff. That's mm-hmm. a big one. Okay. So honestly, I mean, as accomplished as you guys are in your kitchens, you ever just eat a little frozen pizza over the sink or something?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Don't forget, we drink a lot, too. Yeah.
Have you had some spectacular kitchen disasters over the years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I
just had one.
Tell.
It was my first day at my new spot, and Naomi Pomeroy shows up. She's the owner of Beast. She won Top Chef Masters. She's writing another cookbook. I think she was nominated for a James Beard Award. And my flat top was too high. And I freaking burned her food and had to refire. I'm just sweating bullets. I look up at her and I was like, dude, I've cooked for so many food critics in the last month, but you are the scariest person. And she's like, I get it. Just do your thing. And then I put it out.
But you got good marks for it.
Oh, right?
People liking the stuff. Melissa McMillan runs Sandwich and Pastrami Zombie. Billy Busher is the chef at Alchemy. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.